This is the Jake Asmon Show, presented by Rocket Mortgage. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Jake Asmon.
Well, it's John Michaels in for Jake at John Michaels U on Twitter. Ron and I, somebody put out, I don't even know who put it out there, but they had one of those, put five famous people you've met or have been in close proximity of, and we were kind of playing the guessing game with each one of our lists. And of course, I went through Ron's entire list and guessed wrong four times in a row until I finally figured out, oh, it's the one person I didn't guess. You had down some interesting names. Samuel L. Jackson, Dick Van Dyke, John Elway, Tony Hawk, and Jane Goodall. The next guy coming up on the Progressive Insurance guest line, he has got a huge resume, but he's doing some great work right now with the Special Olympics. It's Big Smooth. Sam Perkins, our guest right now. Sam, really appreciate the time this morning. How you doing?
Man, good, man. I appreciate you.
So you are doing some work, obviously, with the Special Olympics, global ambassador. In Abu Dhabi, the Crown Prince has committed $25 million to help bring inclusive education program to six different countries. What made you want to get involved with the Special Olympics?
Well, I'm trying to make it short, long story short, but it's a good story. It started off with Dean Smith, my college coach at University of North Carolina. And he was always telling us to give back anytime we get a chance. I mean, there were so many programs, so many, you know, things out there that you can, you know, always get together with and try to exploit in a good way. So I did some work for Special Olympics at one point in time. I didn't know what Special Olympics was all about. And then I got together and went to an event. And ever since then, the people of Special Olympics saw my work and they invited me into the of their world. And next thing I know, I'm on the board. I went to Shanghai, my first trip, to see the World Games and Special Olympic World Games. And from there, I've been involved ever since 2007. And ever since then, I've been advocating for them, for people with intellectual disabilities, meeting so many students, so many athletes, and just parents and caretakers and family members and celebrities that have someone that they love and cherish, fighting for their social and inclusion. So it's just been with me. I can't say enough about why I'm so involved. I'm still involved as a global ambassador. So I transitioned out from a board member to a global. And every time I go somewhere, it's always good to see people from all over the country.
Sam, you mentioned something really interesting there with systemic change. And we're a country right now that's dealing with a lot of our own issues. But for kids that are in the Special Olympics, and I've done some work with them here in Atlanta, how much does it mean for you to see them kind of get that voice and have people not judge them for what ails them?
Well, that's been a challenge ever since I've got involved. Only because the perception is always, you know, they something's wrong with them, or they feel the need that they need help, and it's just the total opposite. I mean, we students, athletes, people with intellectual disabilities carry conversations on just like we are. They're very astute in what's going on. They may not be involved as much as we are, but they are aware of their surroundings. And the biggest thing is that they work in society just like you and I. Of course, they have to pick and choose to their strength, but at the same time, they are socially aware and inclined to do things on their own. They get married, they have jobs, they live, you know, on their own. And because of the advancement of Special Olympics and their programs, they are able to do these things. Sure, there is a template for them to follow at first. But as they grow, I mean, they fall in love just like you and I. They get married and things of that nature. So Special Olympics has done a great job globally and especially domestically here, to the point where we are so proud of those board. Those when I talk about those board meetings, they plan. I mean, it's a board meeting all day. Don't get me wrong. We don't suck and jive in there. It's a serious matter because of the fact we take it very seriously when it comes to ID.
We've got Big Smooth Sam Perkins, our guest right now on the Jake Asmund Show. John Michaels in for Jake. Sam, we got to talk some basketball, and we'll get back to the Special Olympics conversation as well. The last dance was just played, obviously, for 10 weeks. We all watched it with Michael Jordan. You were on that 1982 North Carolina team, but it was you and Big Game James were the stars there. Did you know then that Mike was going to be Mike?
Well, the way he came out, the way he flourished in the NBA, no. Because the concept at Carolina was we all were teammates. Nobody, whoever got the stardom that night, particular night, it was one of those things. It was a team concept, and we bought into it. But we knew Michael was an exceptional athlete because he did some things in practice. Just watching him grow from a freshman to his junior year, I was able to play with him for those years, and he was a phenom then. So, I mean, he did a lot of things that are very savvy with the ball, going to the hoop. At that time, I think people weren't doing that. Yeah, we had guys close to doing that. The closest guy I can think of was Len Bias, and Len was probably his strongest competitor at the time in the ACC. So, but Michael, you know, the last dance and those things really opened up some people's eyes. His demeanor was that caught me, and with his teammates, and how he was just so competitive, involved in each and every little detail from practice to the games. It's something that sometimes I don't see that during the day's game.
You were a 1980 Player of the Year in high school basketball, and I've always been fascinated with the New York basketball scene. We don't play basketball in the South the way you guys do. What was it like growing up in New York trying to play basketball against the guys in the park that were just out there, you know, from sunup to sundown?
Well, I was just talking to somebody about New York basketball, and it's not like it used to be, but I'm going to tell you, I played with older guys. And so you never play with somebody your age. You play with older guys to get to learn the game. And playing in all those parks, West Forth, Rucker, Dykeman, Brevoort, playing for guys that you've seen in the pros or somewhere along the line, it was hard. I mean, the storyline is you get up on Saturday and you go to whatever park, let's say West Forth, and you get there early, and I was able to see people like Connie Hawkins, Sam Worthen, guys like this, Michael Ray Richardson, and these guys were young at the time, so I was even a little younger then. But the point to all that is to say that you sit there all day and watch basketball, and the most exciting thing about New York basketball, and whoever's listening from New York, it was the arguments of, you know, calling your own fouls, and for 20 minutes, it was almost like an intermission of the game because no one wants to give up the ball because they know if you lose, you're sitting down for the rest of the day. You may not even get back on court. That's how competitive it was. So you called your own fouls, and the game was maybe to 11 or 8, but those 8 points were so crucial. And we do that now sometimes in scrimmage where we call our own fouls and we don't want to give up the ball. But after a while, you see how the basketball was so in-depth because you had so much talent there and guys coming to the park and young guys looking at them. You made you want to go play basketball, and that's what happened with me. I just wanted to go play when I went back home.
Any time that you called a bad foul and some of the older guys said, don't call that foul again?
Well, okay, so let's say we know point game is coming.
Right.
So let's say we got 7 or you got it was no win by 2. It was no nothing like that. So if 7 up, the next point is and if you miss that layup, you got hit a little bit. So people would get mad that you call your own foul. Like, and you didn't get fouled. And so you argue for the next 15, 10, 15, 20 minutes sometimes, not giving up that ball. So one guy's got to cave in. Either you give the ball to the other team, or the team goes, man, let him go. You know, we'll stop him anyway. But so if you score the eighth point, or whatever game winner, your team is actually sitting down because there's so many other players trying to get on court. So they already got their five. So it'll be 5-on-5, and so there was so your team may not get back on ever because of the fact that there's so many other guys coming to play. And so Saturday, like you said, sun up around 8, 9 o'clock till 8:30, 9 o'clock, till you couldn't see the basket anymore. The lights would come on, so we knew that was the basketball. That's the basketball I grew up on, and it was just one of those things where it will never happen again because we don't have that mindset anymore.
You had a really good NBA career, but when I look at the way the game is played today, I almost feel you came into the league about 20 years too early. How would you operate now with all this pace and space and your ability to shoot the ball?
Well, I'll tell you, that's a lot of people say that, but I don't know. Because so many people are shooting the three, I don't know if it's a commodity or if it's just another shot. When I play with the Lakers and especially with the Sonics, Indiana, it was a commodity. It was a strategy because back then, if you know basketball, we had a lot of big centers. We had Olajuwon, we had Shaq, we had Rick Smits, we had Eaton from Utah, and we had these type of guys that would train. That the notion is stop the layup, stop the layup. So Coach Carl would envision us as an open court game, and he wanted the center to shoot threes as well. So once I came there, I just started working on the threes and working with the guards and shooting with them and try to get it even better. I even worked out with Byron Scott in practice with Mike Dunleavy, and I'm shooting down with them. I couldn't beat them, of course, but eventually I got better. So my point to saying that is that the shot was more of a commodity, more of a strategy thing, and now you see everybody shooting it. So, I mean, I would be just one of, 400, 300 guys shooting a three now.
A couple of more moments with Sam Perkins. It's really, really cool what you're doing with Special Olympics. And I wanted to go back to this because we've got some World Winter Games coming up in Russia in January of 2022.
Right.
We got the USA Games in Orlando in June of 2022. How can people get involved? And what does maybe a donation do to help fund stuff like the Special Olympics?
Well, they can get involved easily through their local programming. Special Olympics is in almost every state, and we have a website, specialolympics.org, and you can actually see where Special Olympics is in your community. But more so than anything, we, like I said earlier and like you mentioned before, the platform has grown to the point where we've now hit mainstream. And before, there was a little, hesitancy about what Special Olympics was all about and things of that nature. But since we're now on the platform of the NBA, and the NBA does a great job supporting us, we have Unified Games, which is people with and without intellectual disabilities. And that was a very important step for us because of the fact that it gave now a perception that to people that people with ID is just like people without. And so the games are competitive. The athletes are more in tune to be very competitive, just like you and I and any other sport. And with that said, as you mentioned at the top of the talk, the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi gifted $25 million over 4 years to six countries. And in those six countries, which would, I think is Argentina, Egypt, India, Pakistan, Romania, and Rwanda, we're unable to you know, have these unified champion schools come about and grow to their potential needs. Each country will have a model best fit their needs, and these schools will increase the confidence of students with ID, create more social inclusion, social environment, increase opportunities for students to work together, raise awareness about students with ID, and also reduce bullying, which is a big factor. And everywhere we go, we find that bullying and teasing is offensive language is always prevalent. So with the gift and with the support of people that come into into Special Olympics, we are able to have social inclusion and acceptance for people and students with ID. And I'm just happy to be part of it because I've been talking about it forever since I've been involved, and I'm glad I made that choice. That's probably one of the best choices I made to be a part of.
Sam, really appreciate the time. Thank you for everything that you're doing. Again, check it out, specialolympics.org. You can follow him on Twitter, @SpecialOlympics, #UnifiedGeneration, #ChooseToInclude. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Man, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, man. Talking.
Thanks a lot. That's Sam Perkins, our guest there on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line. We'll come back. We'll say goodbye on the Jake Asman Show.